Donald Trump is soon to be back in the White House. It's one of the biggest, most epic pieces of fulfilled prophecy that we have seen over the last few months. And it comes at a time where there is fulfilled prophecy all around us. We just sent our latest print edition of our Trumpet magazine off to the printers that digs in great depth into that and a whole load of other subjects. And we'll review that with you on today's Trumpet World. I'm joined today by Trumpet Assistant Managing Editor Philip Nice, and we are going to once again take a bit of a deep dive into our latest Trumpet print edition. Philip, thank you for joining me.
Good to be with you, and really good to be discussing this issue in particular.
Yeah, this is an exciting issue, and that's where I wanted to start. I think we've got, there's four articles, I think, in total from Trumpet Editor-in-Chief Gerald Flurry. But three of them really do quite directly revolve around fulfilled prophecy, where we've got the first one, a miracle victory on the return of Donald Trump. And then even the infographic, I mean, he didn't write the infographic, but it's an excellent companion to his article that goes through all of the forecasts that he made, all of those different times where he said that Donald Trump would come back, and puts it side by side with all of these news events that so often look like they were saying Donald Trump will not be back, that he cannot come back, and that the Republicans need some kind of new, different candidate. So there's that. And then he's got his article, The Fall and Rise of Lebanon, where that's an entirely different fulfilled prophecy. And that opens with many statements that he'd made based on Bible prophecy about what is happening in Lebanon. And then finally, there's his article, After Trump's Victory, Watch Germany, that is about a prophecy more in the midst of being fulfilled. But I think you can see fulfilled prophecy in the way that the German government fell right after the election in the United States. So I think on powerful, vivid display in this Trumpet magazine is fulfilled Bible prophecy.
I think so. And I think that you and I have talked about this before, but that phrase Bible prophecy or fulfilled Bible prophecy certainly perks people's ears up. But I think there's just so many different ideas of what that is or what that looks like. You see the Nostradamus prophecies on the tabloids at the supermarket, at least we do here in America. Certain types of tabloids just really play on that interest that a lot of people have. But this Trumpet, starting on page one, says this is what fulfilled Bible prophecy looks like in 2024 in the American political situation, or like you said, in foreign affairs as well. And so that's obviously a huge claim to make. You're cruising around the internet, you stop on this video, you're watching someone talk about fulfilled Bible prophecy, and you've got to look at that and say, is this what fulfilled Bible prophecy looks like? And the farther you get into it, the further you get into it, the more you do have to account for example, as you've said, even on this program before, how would Trumpet Editor-in-Chief Gerald Flurry know to stick with the forecast that Donald Trump will come back to power at a time when I remember him not even being in the headlines in early 2021. And the first time he was, it was kind of, I wondered if even he wanted to take another run at the presidency, let alone, you know, succeed in it. So so I'm glad that you just underlined that from the very beginning. This is fulfilled Bible prophecy. And obviously that's a challenge to the viewer to check out and prove for themselves.
And it's a challenge. I mean, it's a challenge not from us in many ways. It's a challenge directly from the Bible itself. Isaiah 41 and verse 21, God says, produce your cause, says the Eternal. Bring forth your strong reasons, says the King of Jacob. Let them bring forth, show us what will happen. Let them show the former things, what they be, that we may consider them and know the latter end of them, or declare us things to come. Show the things that are to come hereafter, that we may know that you are gods. Yes, do good or do evil, that we may be dismayed and behold it together. Behold, you are of nothing, and your work of naught. An abomination is he that chooses you. I mean, that's God's challenge to those that might claim godlike status, you could say. I think it's a challenge certainly to those that would say that they speak for God, and that will put themselves in a position where they're telling you how to live your life. God says, okay, well, here's one way we can see, are you God or not? Tell us the future. What is going to come? And yeah, you do get a lot of Christian groups in this world that don't talk at all about Bible prophecy. But the Bible, not only a third of it is Bible prophecy, but it directly cites Bible prophecy as being, well, this is how you can know that God is behind someone. Now, you know, Bible prophecy is always accurate. Sometimes as we apply it to world events, we make mistakes. And I think this issue doesn't shy away from that either. I mean, it quotes Mr. Flurry talking about how we did think Donald Trump was going to stay in power, that he would remain, and that you would have him, you know, continue in the White House. Now, there are issues around that election, but Joe Biden has been in the White House for the last 4 years, and he doesn't shy away from that. And okay, you know, there are prophecies about Donald Trump. At the end of Donald Trump's first term, those prophecies were not fulfilled. So Mr. Flurry said, well, there's more of Donald Trump as president coming. It is natural to think that would mean that he would remain in the White House. That didn't happen. But that's our mistake. That's not the Bible's mistake. And really, this issue in all of those articles, you know, shows, yeah, God can forecast what can come next. And even that underscores that point. Men make mistakes, but God knows what is coming next.
Right. And as you say, those who speak for God do have to account for the fact that so much of the Bible contains Bible prophecy or contains prophecy. I would naturally, I think, just naturally be more interested in the teachings or the history or whatever it might be. But I've got to account for the fact that there is chapter after chapter, or sometimes it's interspersed verses or whatever it might be, that's clearly a commitment by the author of the Bible that this will happen in the future at nation, you know, national level things, sometimes individual level things, but things that affect entire nations. So everyone who does claim to speak for God, every church should have some sort of explanation about prophecy and not just ignore it. But I haven't been in every church, but I think many of them do ignore it because they don't want to explain it. They don't want to be found, you know, wrong in their explanations. There have been plenty who have tried and who have turned out to be, you know, very wrong in their timing and in their identification of who's being talked about and so forth. And the Bible is a coded, encoded book. But again, you have to come back to that fact that there's so much of it is prophecy, and Jesus Christ himself, as we often say, was a prophet. He did prophesy. So it's not something that he avoided. He didn't just stick to moral teaching. He got straight into Bible prophecy as well. So this issue of the trumpet, in particular, this issue of the trumpet, is one to look at and to prove for yourself. Am I looking at the correct explanation of Amos and these other books? Is this fulfilled Bible prophecy hitting me in the face? And if so, how did trumpet editor-in-chief Gerald Flurry do that? It's not a superior, you know, intellect or superior connections or superior budget. It's something else is at work there.
And you're right that then there's a lot of questions that do come from that. I mean, just listening to you speak, I'm kind of reminded of, you look at, say, early church history, and the Christian church, as far as what the world watches and looks at in the first few centuries after Jesus Christ, they did talk quite a bit about Bible prophecy because they see it in the Bible. And they kept getting it wrong. because God wasn't behind those movements. Like, just somebody looking at the Bible and talking about prophecy isn't enough. And so in the end, they stopped talking about Bible prophecy, and there were various different rulings, if we're not even going to get into this, and policies. And that points to the fact, again, it's only possible with God. And so then if God, it's a sign that, well, is God with these groups? If they're not able to talk about prophecy in the way that the Bible does, if they've had to just give up on it because things prophesied never panned out. And I think that is why a lot of people may be kind of jaded on this subject, is there is a long, long history of people making forecasts that they claim come from the Bible, only for them to be spectacularly incorrect. And exactly as you said at the end there, like, just because somebody says, well, this is what's going to happen next based on the Bible, that doesn't mean that what they're saying is based on the Bible. Just because we get up here and tell you, hey, this is what the Bible says is going to happen in Germany or in America, like, don't take our word for it. That we could be misunderstanding. We could be lying for all you know. Like, get your Bible out yourself and check. And that's what passages like Isaiah 41 are demanding you do. God puts value on this. The Bible, and you go to the New Testament, where in Acts 17, the Bereans are praised because they went and checked up on their leaders. So this is more than just, well, take our word for it. And as you say, this is a great opportunity in this issue to see Bible prophecy in action, and as a kind of a springboard to digging into that. So we had those three articles there. I think this first one, A Miracle Victory, we talked about a fair bit of what ultimately would go into this article when we had our live show immediately after the U.S. election. You know, this article reviews a lot of the Bible prophecy that went into Mr. Flowery making this forecast, just like we did on that earlier program. So maybe for now, if we move on to talking about the Middle East article, the fall and rise of Lebanon. I think that's, like, I could see this, I think, in any other month could well have been a cover issue, like, for the Trumpet print. And one of the things that we'd be talking about a huge amount, because it's an epic example of fulfilled prophecy, it just kind of got buried by this even bigger example of Donald Trump winning that election. And this article starts with, you know, this is from Mr. Flurry in October 2020. Hezbollah will forfeit much of its power. He wrote that. And Iran will lose its grip over Lebanon. That is exactly what we're seeing right now. This article is coming in the backdrop of Hassan Nasrallah being killed. You know, all of these things that Mr. Flurry said would happen, where that somehow Lebanon would be broken out of the Iranian orbit. That is what we're seeing right now.
The thing that's amazing to me is you could be in, you know, listening to a sermon in 1998 or whatever, or reading a Trumpet magazine in, 2002 or somewhere in there, and he will focus in on something like Lebanon and tell you this is what's going to happen because of Bible prophecy. And it's intriguing to me because it's not really, he's not just jumping on the news of the day in some of those old Trumpet articles that you and I are familiar with. He's not chasing the narrative. I mean, there's usually some sort of news event that he's talking about in there, but it's not just, he talks about it at a time when nobody else is talking about it, is what I'm trying to say. And then you come to the major events of this year that even I think you and I weren't expecting, Israel to have such success and for the calculus to change just so quickly in this way. At least I wasn't. And now it's, like you say, it's super topical. It could be a cover story. A lot of people are interested in it. People who in the 90s didn't know where Lebanon was, which I probably would have included me, are very interested in, wow, what's happening there? If this changes, if Iran loses its influence here, then what does that mean for this, that, and the other thing? So I don't know, just that's the first thing that came to mind as you're just introducing this article and as I'm looking at it, is this is so topical, so interesting, but it's built on years of coverage when it was not as topical and not as interesting and not as much was happening. And yet that same fundamental message, that same conclusion has probably been written in one form or the other by Mr. Fleury several times over the course of two or three decades.
And I think there's examples of that happening within this article of say other things that nobody else is talking about that I think that I'm sure will be big news in however many weeks, months, years. I mean, like Cyprus, this is something that, you know, he brings out this, okay, Hassan Nasrallah is dead. He goes to Psalm 83, which is this prophecy that there's a list of Middle Eastern countries listed as being allied with Assyria. And it's an alliance that has never happened before in history. It's an alliance that fits perfectly with an end time prophecy, a very clear end time prophecy in Daniel chapter 11. And based on that, you know, Mr. Fleury has long said, well, Lebanon is not, it's going to break away from Iran. It won't be allied with Iran. Instead, it's going to be allied with Europe. And our booklet, The King of the South, will go through in much more detail with you. So you can prove that, like we've been talking about, exactly what that Psalm 83 prophecy means. But he talks about that and then very quickly gets into Cyprus. And I think if you were to pick up 100 other articles that talked about the death of Hassan Nasrallah, I don't think you would find a single other one that had an article with a big beefy section on Cyprus in it. Because Mr. Fleury isn't following what other people are talking about. He is following what the Bible says. And how we've seen Bible prophecy fulfilled in history as well. I think that's something that informs the focus on Cyprus too, and the role, you know, the Bible has, the role Cyprus has played. I mean, he's looking at that, seeing that Bible prophecy says Europe is going to play a much greater role in moving into the Middle East. He's before said that Lebanon will play a linchpin role in that because they have quite a strong Christian population, which you don't see in other Middle Eastern countries, and so that Lebanon would act as a linchpin. But he's looking at that prophecy and also seeing, okay, well, when else have we seen Europe moving into the Middle East? What has been involved? And Cyprus has played a key role in that. And so he's looking at Cyprus, watching what's going on there, because, well, when Europe gets more involved in the Middle East, Cyprus is almost always a vital stepping stone in that. So I think that the way that that is covered there is also just fascinating.
I think so. I think that it's a revelation to a lot of people that the Bible talks about, you know, specific nations and specific things happening. And some have, like you said, tried to find, okay, well, what do these names in the Bible, you know, do they correspond to something that happened in the Middle Ages? Do they correspond to something that happened in the, you know, in the 1800s or the distant future from now? Like, but if you get into it and if you read it, then you will see, oh, well, this connects to that and this connects to that. But then you compare it to what is actually happening in the world, right? Like what actually transpired. And for, you know, years or decades, maybe you're waiting for it. You're looking for it. It hasn't happened yet. We're at a juncture, not only with the American politics, and more than just American politics, the American nation, but also with Lebanon, also with Iran, as you say, also with these major powers, that, you know, you've heard it called an inflection point. This is happening now. And it's not just, I think, as you said, it's not just, you know, in the future, watch for this. We're still watching for a lot of things, but it has happened in Lebanon. It has happened. It's the calculus has changed. The situation on the ground is different. The world is different in Lebanon than it was a couple weeks, months ago. And yet somehow this explanation of Bible prophecy has been on the books for hundreds, thousands of years. So it's intriguing. It's fascinating. And you've got to keep digging to actually prove it. You know, just don't read it and accept it. But definitely stop, have a look, think about it, and realize, as you said, these are all different. They're very different events, but they're all fulfilled prophecy.
And I think both of these events, it's kind of odd in some ways. We're talking about Lebanon and Donald Trump's election as being parallel, but they really are, in that I think there are some things that if you're a very clever analyst, you can forecast. And you can kind of say, look, I think this is how this country's relationship, these are its alliances, its power is going to develop over the next 10, 20 years. For Lebanon, one of the massive decisive events was a chunk of fertilizer that Hezbollah was using as ingredients for bombs exploded in Beirut and caused masses of damage. Like, you know, you, if you're sitting and making a 5-year, 10-year forecast for Lebanon, you can't take into account one of the largest accidental explosions in history hitting the country's capital city because Hezbollah was careless with the dockyards, and then that completely changing this terrorist group's basis for political support within Lebanon, allowing them to be much more easily dislodged from power and changing the whole trajectory of the country. And then it's the same, you think about Donald Trump, and one of the major decisive points for the election was the assassination attempt. And obviously, if his head had been pointed slightly differently, he wouldn't be president-elect right now. And again, that's something that, yeah, you can analyze polls, and maybe somebody could come up with a better statistical model for analyzing polls months out from an election and taking into account media views and do better than the current crop of reporters at predicting who's going to win. You're not going to be able to predict someone turning their head to dodge a bullet. And I think that's an important part of only God can do that. But also it points to God's, not just his power in forecasting what is going to happen, but actively intervening to fulfill those forecasts. And that's something that Mr. Flurry has pointed to time and time again as well, that if we're understanding why prophecy and why God gives prophecy, you know, it shows his power to forecast, but he shows that he rules in the kingdom of men, that, as it says in Daniel 4. I think we've quoted that perhaps more than any other scripture on this show, that fulfilled prophecy shows God is involved, that he's involved in this world, that if you turn to him, he can be involved in your life, that he is not a distant, hands-off father, and that he is involved in his children on this planet, and ultimately he's involved with the whole planet as he plans to bring all of mankind into his family. So it's just interesting that you see both of those stories here, both of which very clearly show not just God accurately forecasting, but God being very involved in their fulfillment.
Right. You're talking about how many things are connected. I as human beings, and even in journalism, we like to, and we need to, put things in different categories and different silos and separate things from one another. And you can say, well, I'm kind of a news junkie, or I'm kind of into this, or I'm into that. But these things are all connected. Like you say, I mean, Christians in particular, they're the ones who might be interested in Bible prophecy. Well, and a lot of regular people too, but many Christians, you know, obviously the Bible is their book, and that God is the one God who, you know, renewed the surface of the earth in 6 days, on the seventh day rested. This idea of this one creator God, and him having a purpose in all of this, and him having certainly the capacity to influence and change things, like you say, as you read the Bible, you see, you get to know that God, and it becomes more and more logical to look at the nations as a drop in the bucket. You know, to look at the surface of the earth and this entire generation of human beings as not as important as we think we are, not as just, you know, like he has that great power and he's using it. So he's not just doing it for its own sake. He's doing it to communicate to us, right? That's why Bible prophecy is there. There is a message in it. There is something personal that we take from it, and we live our lives differently. We do different things than we otherwise would have done because of Bible prophecy. It's not just the script that's playing out that doesn't matter, that, you know, you don't have any, you know, effect on or anything. It's a message, I think, as you were introducing there. It's a message from God to us that we do need to act on and take a lot of inspiration, I think, and hope from.
I mean, it's something you see mocked, I think, as well, from the non, you know, from atheists, this idea that, you know, they'll make fun of the idea like, oh, you prayed about finding your car keys. Is God really concerned about you finding your car keys? The earth in this massive, massive universe is so tiny and insignificant that even if there was a God, he would not care what people on it are doing. And in many ways, Bible prophecy is God's answer to that, where he's saying, yeah, I am very involved in what is going on this earth, and you can prove it. And that's what we've seen with Donald Trump coming back, where, yeah, he was very involved with exactly when one of man's 8 billion human beings happened to turn his head to look at a different screen. Like, God is involved in world events. But I wanted to go down to that third article from Mr. Flurry that we mentioned, After Trump's Victory, Watch Germany, where this is, I think, a little different from the two in that this is a much, much older, longstanding prophecy. I mean, all of these prophecies are in the Bible. They're all very old from that standpoint. But God reveals them at different times and God's church grows in understanding of those. And Herbert W. Armstrong forecast the rise of a German strongman. He was writing about this years and decades ago. This has got to be one of the most long-standing forecasts of his. And so this is, and then it's not as fulfilled, say, as Lebanon or as Donald Trump's return. There's less of that prophecy in the rearview mirror that we can turn back and look on. But it was really remarkable the way that you had Donald Trump, and in many ways, apparently coincidentally, the same day that the world was waking up to find out who had won the American election, Germany was waking up to find out, oh, we don't have a government anymore. We're going to have some kind of election. And I think Bible prophecy really does provide the connection between those two. That Bible prophecy talks about one individual that would have a really major, powerful role, a destructive role in U.S. politics. And then Mr. Flurry wrote over the summer, we're going to see that guy diminished. And then the next person like that that he talks about is going to rise up in Europe. And so we see him diminished in America, and immediately Europe goes to the vote. And Mr. Flurry's focus there was, well, watch for what happens in Germany to lead to the rise of this German strongman. Now that you look at what is apparently going to happen, the way that all the pundits believe things will play out in Germany, you are heading for a long time of weak government and even chaos. And back then, when they first announced the election, Olaf Scholz wanted to cling to power for as long as possible. Germany was going to look at having elections in late March. There was a lot of pressure on him for that. That's been brought forward now to late February. But everything kind of points to an inconclusive election. That's what all the polls say that you would have. And last time, or one of the times that we had that, it took them 6 months to negotiate a government. You kind of start adding this timeline together, and you're looking at potentially Germany spending the best part of the first year of Donald Trump's time in office still figuring out how are they going to govern themselves. And then meanwhile, this has been on display just the last week or so, where France still has this inconclusive elections that they had over the summer, and their constitution doesn't allow them to call snap elections right away. And now you've got a situation where the French government can't get its budget through. You've got one small faction in the French parliament, in the National Assembly there, threatening to hold a censure motion and boot out the prime minister. And France can't get its act together. These are Europe's two biggest powers. The European Union coalition is almost at the brink of falling apart before they finally even got it formed over various different regional squabbles of the Spanish have decided they don't actually like the person that's about to be appointed as their EU commissioner. Like, everywhere you look, there is chaos and infighting and weak government, and nobody has any easy solutions out there. So Europe is falling into a chaos. And Mr. Flurry long talked about this chaos as being a precursor to a strongman. Like, okay, the Bible says we're going to have a European strongman who's going to play a massive role in end time events. How do we get there? Well, weak coalition negotiations. Well, let me just look at some of the quotes for that. In 2009, Mr. Flurry said that this leader could perhaps take advantage of a weak coalition. 2002, he talked about him taking power dishonorably, not through votes, coming through a back door. And in this article, he likened it to the way we saw Kamala Harris come into the picture. where Joe Biden is kind of removed at the last minute. We don't have time to go through the normal primary system that we would usually use to choose a Democratic candidate. We've got to parachute someone in. And so as you see lengthy coalitions and no sign of any leadership, and Europe is full of all of these different crises, and you've got Russia firing ICBMs at Ukraine and all of this going on, well, there's a lot of pressure just to short circuit the normal decision makings and parachute someone in. So that part of how this prophecy could be fulfilled, I think we're seeing that has happened already.
Right. And rewind. I mean, Scholz is the first chancellor to come after Merkel. And there were many years of comparative stability in the Merkel years, because Merkel was always there. Like, whatever happened, she ended up at the top of the whatever election or coalition it was. And there was a certain stability there. But even then, the trumpet, for those who read the trumpet, have read the trumpet, watch the Key of David and the Trumpet Daily, they know that the trumpet has been looking for every little twinge, every little twitch in German politics, and to look for these exact conditions to occur, the instability to get just to the breaking point in Germany. And we've been looking very closely. We've been saying it's going to happen because there's this end result that Mr. Fleury has said literally for decades, Mr. Herbert W. Armstrong before him had said for even more decades, that this is Europe's going to become resurgent is in a huge, huge way. Germany is going to be at the top of it, not Germany. And at the top of that is going to be one like dictatorial, powerful and destructive, violent leader. And so we've been looking for that. We've been looking for this kind of, you've described it well, like this identikit sort of generic European politician, rule of the generic European politician for the past few decades to crumble and to fall apart. And for the Germans to finally say, "There, we cannot handle this. Give us strength in our government." And again, Merkel is kind of a placeholder, a kind of a stable influence. As things under the surface started to get more and more wild, as fringe parties started to get more and more powerful, as the fringe moved further to the fringe, and then as the center was being just self-destructive to the European people, to the German people. And now we are starting to see, as you say, it's not as fully developed as the other two examples that we've talked about, but we've been looking for this for nigh a century, decades, and this is going to affect everybody. The man who takes power in Germany, Europe, is going to affect literally everyone who could possibly be watching this.
Yeah. And that's, I thought this was really interesting that, so we were doing the live show the day after the election. And then before we were talking, I was talking to Joshua Michels here in the UK. We were doing a bit of a live show. One thing that came up in several comments on YouTube and then in several emails that people sent as well was basically, okay, you guys are right about Donald Trump coming back, but Mr. Fleury's also been pointing to this individual, Karl Theodor zu Guttenberg, saying that he would come to power and be a strong man in Germany. That hasn't happened. Depending on the email, ha, 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 or, okay, I'll get on board once that happens, or I'll believe once that happens. Which, this article, Mr. Fleury goes right to that. Again, we're not trying to hide anything here, where he talks about Karl Theodor zu Guttenberg as an individual that he still believes could well fulfill that prophesied strongman and closely matches what we'd be expecting from this prophesied strongman. And Joshua and I even talked about him on that Wednesday show, which I don't think those sending in the comments kind of listened to that much of the show, because I think we made quite clear we still stand behind that forecast. But I just thought it was, I thought it was fascinating that that was where some people immediately went. And in some, like, okay, what we've seen with Donald Trump, that's not enough fulfilled prophecy. I want this one as well. I mean, I do think when you see this German strongman, because we've been talking about it for so long, yeah, I think that probably will be a more dramatic moment. And we probably have a trumpet edition that talks about it even more than this one talks about Donald Trump's comeback. So yeah, I think that will be a dramatic moment. But I mean, for someone to say, well, Donald Trump's return isn't dramatic enough, I want to wait for this one too, is a bit of an odd thing to say. But anyway, this article does get into Karl Theodor zu Gutenberg as well, and even ties him into what you see with Donald Trump. I mean, I was surprised going through some of this material and hearing some of it a little bit earlier in a message from Mr. Flurry about just how anti Donald Trump this guy is. I mean, we're used to people being anti Donald Trump. And again, I was kind of surprised talking to Joshua where he said, I've had family members tell me, you're in America, why don't you assassinate Donald Trump? Like the level of hatred that there is there, even in Europe. But still, you know, he said that Donald Trump has fascistic traits. He's called him the blonde maniac in Washington, or ruthless tyrant, or violent madman, depending on how you translate the particular German word. He called him the greatest scumbag that we've ever had in US politics. But this is somebody who genuinely had ambitions to being Angela Merkel's successor, who was her defense minister, who even now is kind of viewed a bit as an elder statesman. Like that isn't normally the way that these people talk. So yeah, I think focusing on him and maybe the potential for, as Germany falls into chaos, right as America probably leads into this resurgence and more strength behind Donald Trump, somebody that is so outspoken there, maybe that will be part of how he'll emerge as a real leader in Germany, as somebody who promises to save them from what he calls the maniac in Washington. I mean, he's out of politics for now, but if you take him at face value about what he says about Donald Trump, if he really believes that he is that dangerous, I mean, would that be reason for him to come out of retirement?
Well, I mean, to your point, and to the viewers' points who are emailing in and making those comments, these things alone do not mean that this man will be the tyrant of a modern Holy Roman Empire. We heard him in a recent meeting say, you know, that just seems like all the indicators that he's looking for in the Bible, from Mr. Armstrong and his work, you know, seem to be that this man will be in power and come to power, like you said, in a indirect way, not be voted in. You know, I mean, he posts a LinkedIn post that's, you know, if I wanted to count how many hours of my everyday life Donald Trump has robbed me, even poisoned me, I would come up with a considerable number. It's a weird thing to say. It's significant. But that itself doesn't mean it, and that he's going to be the leader. The words in Amos 7, the words in Kings that Mr. Flurry pointed to, they themselves do not self-evidently prove that Donald Trump will become president again and regain the office that was stolen from him. I hope people don't think that, you know, you put up this LinkedIn quote and then it's, oh, self-evidently he's going to be the Daniel 8 man. No, you know, Trump's staff doesn't think that. Mr. Flurry doesn't think that. But this is the exact type of thing that I'm saying about, like, these articles that have been written over decades, the things that have been emphasized, that, again, they don't self-evidently prove it. And yet, time after time, you know, and as we see with Donald Trump, as we see in Lebanon, as we're going to see in Germany, those things bear out, those things prove true. And the conclusion that they're leading to, the identification of who the King of the North in the Bible is, or who the King of Fierce Countenance is, as, you know, Germany, as a German strongman, that turns out. So the point is that you can't, it's not this big logical convincing argument that anybody could see if they would just look at it. In the same way that in the Bible, God used certain people to explain the prophecy. It was not self-evident. It's there. You've got to account for it. You've got to know that it's there for a reason. It's a communication from God to you, a prophecy is. And what does it mean? He doesn't reveal it to every, millions of different people. He, if you take the Bible as your model of how he's always done it, he explains it through someone. And so that's obviously a huge claim to make. But that's what this issue is really challenging you to do.
And I think that's a great segue to the next article I wanted to talk about, which is the commentary there from Trumpet managing editor Joel Hilliker, Follow This Man's Faith. Because I think that this is an important point to make. We've talked about already on this show quite a bit. Well, Mr. Flurry said this, Mr. Flurry said that, Herbert W. Armstrong said this or that. And I think we've worked quite hard as well to put the focus on God, and it's about God's power. Mr. Flurry would be one of the first to correct us if we were focusing on him and not on God. And he would absolutely say, all of this is it's about God. It's not about him figuring anything out or, his particular skill or wisdom or anything like that. It's something that all goes back to God. But like you said, God works through individuals, and you look at the Bible and he will work through one man at a time. And then another aspect of that that you can kind of learn from a man that God is using is something that Mr. Hilliker brings out in this commentary, Follow This Man's Faith, where, again, he goes back over some of these quotes, some of Mr. Flurry saying, well, Donald Trump is going to come back. And he wrote, this man has stepped out in bold, Bible-based faith, repeatedly making specific forecasts and bold decisions based on Bible prophecy. And he gives a brief history of some of those decisions and some of those steps. And his point is from Hebrews 13 and verse 7, where it says, follow the faith of those that God are using. It's not about the man. It's about God. And it's about who is pointing you to God. And it's about following their faith. Or as the Revised Standard Version reads, imitate their faith. Mr. Hilliker concludes, real faith is grounded in the Bible and its promises. Mr. Flurry is an example of that. He is the just one who lives by his faith and leads a work of faith. This is an example that you can follow in your own life. If you want God to fill your life with stunning miracles and excited growth, believe God and walk by faith. As 2 Chronicles 20 and verse 20 says, believe in the Lord your God, so shall you be established. Believe his prophets, so shall you prosper. Experience the spiritual confidence and power that comes from living by bold, Bible-based faith. So that is one thing that we can learn from individuals, or one thing why it's worth mentioning individuals. They point us to God. We follow their faith.
Right. And I think this is a bold article, really. A lot of people would kind of recoil a little bit. There's kind of, in this nation at least, there's this kind of feeling that God works with everyone equally all the time, everywhere, and all these different churches and so forth. God does love everyone equally, more than anyone imagines. But if you're looking at the Bible and looking for how he has always done things, I was talking with my kids the other day about Moses and how a couple times others in the congregation, other leaders, other, probably good people in a lot of ways, Aaron, Miriam, Korah, said, well, God doesn't just work through Moses, he works through us too. And God did supernatural punishments on them for that. And I was telling my kids, it's not so that Moses could have fun and be in charge, right? Like being the leader is a hard thing. I mean, look at all the examples of the godly leaders in the Bible, and they all have, it's not just been luxurious and fun for them, as I was explaining it to my children. in a way that they could understand. But there's a conduit, there's a transmitter, and there's just the one, right? And God communicates, you know, what a prophecy means in the context of what we're talking about to one, and then he transmits it. And then the people are to prove that and to compare it against a completely separate source than the man, the Bible, right? Which is a very old thing, and it's been written by many different people. And the probability of it just having been written by human beings mathematically is just impossible. So there's a separate source, and then this person identifying. And then there's this third source, I guess, which is the events that are happening in the world. And then I guess you could add a fourth, the events that are happening in your life. So it is a big claim to make. Oh, there's God is working through one man, not because he favors him, not because he's more intelligent than everybody else or better personality or richer or, you know, anything else that we often focus on. But he has chosen to transmit his prophecies and his law and his both of which are his love to human beings through a source, through a transmitter, if you will. And you will do well to listen to that transmitter, to find that transmitter. And so you got to look at the Bible, you got to look at the way God has done things in the Bible, and you got to look at, as we said, what the Trumpet and Mr. Fleury, editor-in-chief of the Trumpet, is saying, and then prove that for yourself, whether the prophecy, the way of life, the other teachings, you know, moral teachings that you read in the Trumpet don't all aren't all true. You do have to prove that for yourself. You can't just, you know, take our word for it or Mr. Fleury's word for it. As you said, I mean, he's emphasized when somebody was supporting Mr. Armstrong and saying he uncovered these prophecies, he actually really hammered that and said he did not uncover those prophecies. Like, God made it clear and basically, in my words, transmitted it to everyone through Mr. Armstrong. He didn't have just, you know, better physical capabilities. And so that's, I think, important to understand. Again, this is a bold article to make this claim, but check it out, compare it against the Bible, compare this whole issue against the Bible, and it will definitely engage your mind, and you'll definitely see the Bible in a more relevant and more fresh way, and you'll be, your life will be better for it.
Well, I think that also leads us quite nicely onto this other article from Mr. Fleury, What is Mankind's Purpose? Something that a lot of people, you know, a bit different to the other articles we've talked about, but something that a lot of people will ponder. And this subject kind of comes up in this article in some ways. Like, I think this is a subject, you know, what you're talking about, where we tend to go to one of two different extremes. And you do have some churches that are kind of like, God works through one man, and your responsibility is unquestioning obedience. Doesn't even matter if you understand the Bible or can read the Bible in your language, for that matter. You know, your job is to follow that and do what you're told. And then you get another end of the extreme, the other end of the spectrum, where it's kind of, well, there is no structure. God works with everybody directly and equally, just like you were saying. And the reality is neither of those. And one of the things this article brings out is there's a section in there about Isaiah 28 and verse 9, where Isaiah wrote, "Who shall God teach knowledge, and whom shall he make to understand doctrine?" And Mr. Fleury says, "This is the most important question in education. Whom will God teach?" You know, how does God give truth? How does God work with people? It says, the verse continues, "Them that are weaned from the milk and drawn from the breasts. These are the ones who will listen to God. They don't follow human beings who can lead them astray." You know, you follow their faith, you don't necessarily follow that human being. He says, "They're not like nursing infants who unquestioningly accept whatever they're taught, whether from academia, science, religion, or anywhere else. But they will heed the Bible. They have a childlike spirit that listens to God, and they're willing to learn precept upon precept, line upon line, here a little, there a little." God reveals he does teach people. he does work with people, and he doesn't want unquestioning obedience and just following a man by default. Instead, it's as the Apostle Paul wrote in, I think, 1 Corinthians 11, be you followers of me, even as I follow Jesus Christ. I'm going to follow Jesus Christ. Your responsibility is to prove and check that I'm following Jesus Christ. And Paul praised those that did that. And then you follow me. And if you do that, and if you're proving these things, so you're not just following an individual, then God will work with you and open your mind to understand this truth and to understand truth that he reveals to the individual that he's using. And so, yeah, God does work with people, but there is still authority and a system of government in his church. And I think the rest of this article really makes this clear. It goes back to, okay, well, why man? Why does God working with human beings? I mean, this is something that traditional Christianity is pretty ignorant with. What's the end goal here? And a lot of them, it's kind of like, well, you end up in heaven. That is vaguely a nice place. And yeah, but okay, but like, why have all of this? And this article talks about, well, he says, that is why man, it's about finishing the creation of God. That creation isn't purely physical, it's about building God's character as well. He says a bit further up, man was to improve this physical earth, making it beautiful with all the necessary finishing touches. You know, it's about finishing the creation of mankind, of the earth, of the universe, expanding on, like, there is a lot to get done. And what do you see whenever there is a lot to get done? You know, you see structure and you see organization. Like, if God created mankind to accomplish, well, then we need that structure and that government, and we need to get used to working under that structure and that government today. We also need God working in our lives individually. And so that article, I think, you know, in some ways, it goes with that and brings out that balance that is missing from just almost everywhere else.
As you're talking, I'm thinking about how all these things tie together. I mean, what is the great Christian idea? Like, what's the whole thing? You know, when the world was following, you know, the different gods of different things, and, you know, the gods of the earth and the sea and whatever, or a pantheon of gods or pagan gods, the Christianity came and just blew it out of the water with this truth that it's all coming from one great creator God. And one great God who loves his creation and is working with his creation. And that just set people's minds on fire. It was amazing. It was incredible. And unfortunately, it had to be counterfeited and was counterfeited. Now, that's why we see so many people who say, yes, you know, Jesus is the Son of God. God, there is one God. But so many different arguments about what he teaches and so forth. So, but this fundamental idea that we're all God's children, right? I think is what we're seeing in this trumpet issue and what you're talking about, and even in that last article alone that you talked about of Mr. Fleury's about mankind's purpose, is these things: your personal life, your vision, your goal, your purpose, the purpose of your children being born to you, what's happening in Lebanon, what's happening in Washington, D.C. Yeah, these things are connected, are related, because they all do come back to the one creator God that we all, you know, that Christians all fundamentally, basically believe in. And he is active in how you should raise your children. And he is active in giving you purpose to your daily life and laws, you know, like yes and no's to your personal life. And he is active in Lebanon, and he is active in Washington, D.C. for the purpose, you know, for that purpose of your life. Not for its own purpose, not just to play out like a pre-programmed chess match or something like that, but to get individuals, children, adults, to have that fundamental humbled attitude and love toward God and obedience toward God. I mean, if you really understand it, that prophecy is about Lebanon, prophecy is about Israel, prophecy, you know, those all will eventually get back to turning people to know the true God. Many Christians don't. Many churches don't. That's why they're all arguing. That's why they all conflict. And God is working out a plan for us to realize our purpose and potential, which is to know him.
Well, I think that's a great conclusion to all of these kind of Mr. Flurry articles that we've been talking about. Just before we finish up the show, I think we could do a quick rundown of some of the other articles that are in here. I think we've had the authors of just about all of these on the show to discuss exactly that. But we do going kind of chronologically or going through the issue from front to back, we have Blueprint for an Economic Resurgence by Andrew Miller that I think zooms in on or used as a couple of different ways to make one really important point, and that is that so much of the turnaround that America experiences under Donald Trump is up to Americans. It's about what do you do? And this is purely in the economic sense, but he talks about, say, Elon Musk being appointed to balance the budget. And really, the situation that you have with all of this money being wasted, it is the product of systemic issues. It is the product of the system and the way human beings function within that system. And so cutting waste, well, it's not as simple as just going in there and firing people like it is at Twitter. You have like pork barrel spending exists for a reason. It exists because congressmen say, I'm only going to pass this bill if there's something very specific and direct in it for my congressional district. And so it's like, okay, well, we'll set up something. We'll create a requirement that a factory in there fulfills, and that'll create jobs for 100 people within your congressional district. And the bills balloon to massive sizes, and government budgets balloon. Like, so if Elon Musk is going to be successful, it's not just about Elon Musk. It is about it's about ordinary Americans. And you know, it's the same. He talks about America's trade deficit, where things are being exported overseas. And I mean, Andrew and I don't really see eye to eye on the economics. Maybe we'll have him on the show to discuss that. I mean, that kind of gets to this broader point in that we're writing this and, you know, our expertise, so to speak, is not economics. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not saying trust our forecasts because we're great economists. We're saying trust our forecasts because it's in the Bible. But I think the basic point, ultimately, that why is America being outcompeted? Why are other nations taking advantage of the United States? Well, A, it's because of weak leadership that has let them do that and haven't stood up and defended American industry when they've been attacked by China and Europe, but also low productivity. This is a result of, again, of character issues and deeper issues. So if Donald Trump is going to fix the American economy on that front, well, it's going to require the participation of everyone. So yeah, there's a lot of very positive signals from Donald Trump coming back, but whether they last, whether they're sustainable, again, it gets back to repentance. That is all about change, changing directions, and the extent to which even that we experience some of these economic benefits and how long they last depends on how much we change.
Yeah, I think that's a good example of something that you think of as you know, the economy. Like, it's not related to these other issues. I'm more into the economy, or I'm more into personal issues or family, or, you know, morals, or, you know, whatever. We kind of try to separate those things out sometimes. But like you were just summarized it, the moral issue is where the economy comes from, like the behaviors of individuals and groups of individuals and the choices they make, is where economies and nations and everything comes from in the first place. So you can, you know, and Donald Trump probably will make some bold, big, you know, high level decisions that do affect the economy for sure. But I think Andrew did a great job of just bringing to mind throughout the article, not just at the end, that these are these behaviors and the results and the problems we have and the solutions do come from individual character. And really, I think fundamentally, laws of cause and effect. Like, there are laws of cause and effect of human behavior, including finance, including the economy. And I think that maybe the strength of that article is to bring that out and to point people to that.
And that's, like you said, where it concludes with cause and effect. But really, it's there throughout the whole thing, that if we want this to stick, it gets back to, are we doing the things that will cause prosperity? Right. Well, I think we can skip over probably. There's a couple of articles in there about how Donald Trump will affect the Middle East, how Donald Trump will affect Asia. I think we've talked about that quite a lot on this show. The other big feature article on there is from Jeremiah about the lights going out in Australia. And it's about how China has taken over so much of Australia's energy infrastructure. Other businesses have surrounded Australia with Chinese bases and taking over that whole region. We had him on the show to talk about that last week. Actually, I've got a few follow-up questions I think we'll pose to him when he's back on the show that we got in comments from viewers. But that is a pretty shocking article where it shows how much power China has gotten moving into Australia.
Right. If I was Australian, I would be kind of apprehensive every day. You know, I would sort of have this back of my mind fear of what China specifically could do to the nation if it wanted to. But I do kind of have that fear as an American as well. But I love how the art department there just put the continent on the layout and then just shows like here are all the basically points of attack that China can have. And it's different than hitting a nation with nuclear missiles or whatever that's very real possibility as well. But when you have all these pressure points that you can apply to a nation without erupting into a hot war, kinetic war, then you can use those a lot and you can use those to get other things and to get even more ports and so forth in Australia or in places that Australia has influence over. So I think that's the visual there is really powerful. And it's something to be aware of. Now, I do think an interesting point is, you know, American companies take over other ports and other, you know, other energy companies and so forth. So why no two-page spread of American acquisitions of, you know, foreign companies? Because there have been plenty of them. Well, because this is a warning message of what's going to happen to the modern nations of Israel, the modern nations that descended from the ancient Israelites, because that's what the Bible and its prophecies are warning against. And so again, like this LinkedIn quote over here, or, you know, these acquisitions versus those acquisitions, there's a reason why the Trump is zeroing in on what we do zero in on. And as best we can, like you said, imperfectly for sure, but as best we can, it's because we're trying to zero in on what God is zeroing in on. And he has a specific plan and using specific nations, obviously a specific one true church. And those things, as we've kind of said throughout the episode, are connected. And I think this particular trumpet, I would definitely recommend subscribing if you don't already, but even requesting this particular issue of the trumpet if you can, because it really sort of is kind of this interface or this index into all the different things that the Bible gets into. And I think I would just recommend getting this issue particularly, whether in print for free, of course, or online.
That's a great point. And you can get this magazine if you go to our website, thetrumpet.com. You can go and read this right now. I believe when the show goes out, we'll have it up there. You can download a PDF. You can subscribe. There's a subscribe now button, and this magazine is free. We'll be very happy to send it to you. It comes out 10 times a year, and the only follow-up we give you is we just ask about once a year, hey, are you still reading this? Are you still interested in this? We don't want to be cluttering your mailbox with something you're regarding as spam. So we want to check you're still interested. But beyond that, there is no follow-up. There's no pressure from us to get more involved or order more or send money or anything like that. We're very happy to send you that. And we do send it anywhere in the world. This is not just a North American organization, publication. It's a worldwide work. We send that out wherever you are in the world. We'll be very happy to do that. Now, if you do hit that subscribe now button, you wouldn't get this issue. You'd get the next issue, I think, that goes to press after you've subscribed. So feel free to drop us an email, trumpetworld@thetrumpet.com. If you let us know and say, hey, I would like to get that specific issue, the Miracle Victory issue, or the January 2025 issue, then we'll make sure that we send that issue to you. And I think one final article I can kind of slip in the conclusion that is a good way to conclude this is there's a little one pager there from Steve Herkus called "Early I Will Seek You," that takes some of the debate about Donald Trump's agriculture cabinet member and the news around there to point out an important point that when it comes to, say, agriculture, starting off right is so much easier than coming back and fixing something. And the further back you have to, or the further down the line you come back to try and fix something, the harder it is. And that is emphatic of a spiritual principle, where God says in Proverbs 8 and verse 17, "I love them that love me, and those that seek me early shall find me." David wrote in Psalm 63, "O God, you are my God, early will I seek you." And that article zooms in on that point, that we need to act quickly, seek God early, because there's cause and effect. And if we keep going in a way that's going to cause problems, it causes more and more problems and makes it harder and harder to turn around and to change direction. So, right in today, I guess. It sounds a bit like some of those shopping channel marketing things, you want to have some spiritual momentum to act on that. And we'll be very happy to get that out to you. So thank you so much for joining us. I'm Richard Palmer, Assistant Managing Editor of The Trumpet, thetrumpet.com. We've been talking to Philip Nice, who does a whole lot of work with The Trumpet magazine, about that magazine. You can email us at that website, or at that email address, trumpetworld@thetrumpet.com. You can follow this show at The Trumpet on YouTube, on Rumble, on Twitter, or you can find all of those links at our website, thetrumpet.com. Thank you to George Haddad for engineering and production. We'll be back on Friday with our regular Week in Review show. And until then, keep watching your world.